Bring them in on the rail at a jog, please, on the rail at a jog.
Hello, everyone. We're back with another episode of On the Rail Podcast. I'm actually super intrigued with today's guest. And I know in Jenna's amateur group, there's been a lot of discussion about horse communicators or animal communicators. And both co-host Jenna and I have not had that privilege or giving it a try. So we wanted to bring somebody on and actually enlighten us and give us some details on how it all functions. So I'm super excited. I will let her introduce herself. And then if you just want to tell us what you do.
Hi, guys. My name is Jenna McGrath, and I am a professional. I like to say animal medium because I am the medium between you and them. I can send and receive messages from the animals, and I translate them for you. And it's been a really fun journey.
How long have you been doing this?
I've been doing it my whole life. I didn't realize that I was different. And I'm not that young to know. So I wasn't most of my adult life. I just thought everybody did it. I think we use it a lot more than we're aware of in the horse industry professionally. And so I didn't think I was any different. And then I made the mistake one day and I said, it was a mare. And I said, she said, blah, 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 blah. And they're like, what do you mean she said? And I was like, what do you mean she didn't say? And it made me, it really took me back. And I was like, oh, isn't everybody listening? And then I went down the long road of out where I fit and everything. And in 2020, the universe just said, let's just do it professionally. Like it's a gift and it should be shared.
Do you remember the first time that you were able to hear what an animal had said to you? Do you know what age you were by chance?
I was young. And it before it was the animals, it was definitely people around me that had passed.
That was one of my questions, was whether you just do animals or focus on animals, or you feel all these people, things, spirits, energies talking to you all the time.
Yeah, I do all the things. I love the animal thing. Horses are my thing. But I do all the angels and I can do Akashic records. And there are a lot of different psychic things that I can do. Those are all like a whole nother story. But with the animals, I had a cat. I was probably in second grade, who would make up, like, wanted my brother and I to play with her, and she would make up these elaborate things. Like, she would make us play show and tell with her, and she would sit with us for hours. You could put her in this position, and she would do this. Because it was her, it was what she wanted to do. We just did what she wanted to do.
But did your parents ever notice anything? Like, that the gift that you had, did they notice any of that? Or was it just a natural thing for you to be doing?
I was quiet. I was super quiet. I think that my grandma knew. I'm pretty sure that my grandma was gifted herself and coached me along feeling safe with myself in that regard. But no, I just lived in my own little world. I just always had a lot of fun with the animals, and I was really put on a path. Like my trainer growing up, like she was all about listening. This is a little bit more down the line on the topics, but it's part of listening. There's a lot of consent in listening. So there's a lot of, do you want me to hear your feelings today? And they can say no or yes or whatever. Then you just have to be okay with it. But so there was a lot of consent-based riding with my trainer growing up. And then I went pro right out of high school. Or I did 1 year of college and went pro. And I just took that forward. And I trained for DeGraff Stables for almost 10 years. And I used that in raising and training those babies. That's where I got really practiced, is because I had to use it fast.
So is this like a, for lack of a better word, like a cheat code for you with training? Or was it more of a burden in some ways, or what?
Well, it was, but we know we're in a business right now where what is best for them and what the desired result is do not parallel or do not align. One of the first things I was told when I started professionally was that I trained like a girl. And it really, it took me on a while ride as far as like a self journey and to learn like what it meant to not train like a girl. And I learned all of those ways, and that's how I raised a lot of those babies. But now that I get to ride like me, I'm a girl, it's been so much more fun and so much more rewarding. And like the stuff that horses will do with you is, I don't need a bridle anymore. I don't need any of that stuff. We just do things as one, go trail ride or whatever.
Were you told by a horse that you train like a girl or
no, a person?
Okay. I was like, what would a horse mean by that? I'm curious, but okay. Anyway, carry on.
At that point, I was just really listening to them and doing everything by feel. If they couldn't do this, then I waited till they could do this. And if they couldn't do that, I waited till they could do that. But when you're in an under pressure situation and you need them to do that right now, they can't do it, just they're not ready. They'd have to be the appropriate age in their early teens to be able to actually achieve that.
When you decided to take it professionally, what was that like as far as like, I can't imagine, even if you feel yourself like you communicate with animals, but then to have to do it for other people, or I assume you do things that maybe are over the phone. I'm sure we'll get into this, like if you're not specifically right there with them. So kind of what's that transition like when you're now trying to prove it to other people that you have this capability, for lack of a good question?
It was terrifying because I knew I was different. I knew not a lot of people can do it. And a lot of people have a lot of beliefs about it. People are a lot more, in the last 4 years, people have gotten way more open about it. But in 2020, it was still a little not as prevalent. So it was super nerve-wracking. It really has only been this year that I've been confident enough to like come on here and actually talk about what I do and worry about the people that are afraid of it. But it just grew gradually. The distance stuff was, I had never done that before, so I used it more in the training aspect. And I was at the World Equestrian Center in Ohio, and my now good client and friend, Betty Snyder, was like, people do this over a distance. Here's a picture. Try it. And I was like, okay. And we talked about the horse, and I said what it said. And she's like, you're spot on. And I'm like, oh, what? So then I started doing the phone readings, and then now it's been so many that it, like, how do you not believe it? Because I don't know. I don't Google people. I don't look at anything. I barely looked at your name before I talked to you because I don't want to know anything. I just want to be pure information from them. I read a horse the other week that after we were done, it was like, go look me up now. And I looked up, and they had like 38 world championships. It was like, she needs to bring all of her trophies out and put them right in front of me because I have no idea. Like, it doesn't feel like I've done that. Like, I still have insecurity. So it's very interesting.
When you're doing, we'll just go with the long distance ones that maybe you're reading over the phone. Is it harder for you to establish that connection, or what helps you get that connection? Is it a picture, or what is it that you need for them to connect with them, I guess?
So my struggle is keeping them away from me. I have no problem connecting. I don't even need the photo. I like the photo because it makes me feel better. But there are a lot of times that they come to me before you've ever scheduled. I did one, I forget its name. But there were a couple days before and I was like, gosh, Lily, I don't know you. I can't help you. I don't know you. I don't know who your parents are. And sure enough, 3 days later, somebody scheduled me with Lily.
That was another question I had, is like, if you feel like you're hearing this stuff all the time, how do you, when you have an appointment with a human, mm-hmm. how do you identify which animal out of, however many thousands or whatever that you hear thoughts from time to time, like, how do you know you've got the right one?
Wow, because every individual is unique. That's a really good question. I used to explain it like DirecTV. Everybody has a channel. So you can't get it wrong because there's only one sci-fi channel and there's only one Food Network. And it's very subtle, but obviously very subtle, but very unique. You could never mistake one for the other.
Interesting.
My brain is like seeing right now because on the people side of things, being a medium for them, I don't know if I could do that, but the animal thing, I feel like that's almost every animal lover's dream, is to be able to talk to their animals. which is like mind-boggling to me that people are capable of doing it. Could you, or do you have a particular memorable, I'm going to skip the
memorable.
There we go. Or impactful that communication that you've had before? Is there any that spring to mind that were like just heartwarming or moving in a certain way?
So the reason that I'm also good at this is because after it happens, it leaves my brain. Like, it would be hard to, if you're back in front of me, then I can reopen it. But when it's over, I let it go because there's so many. But like the deep stuff, I let that go. It goes out of my brain. But there was one time the horse kept saying, I don't want to ride the boat. I was like, I'm not saying this to this lady. That sounds nuts. What if it rides a boat? And finally, it said it like six times. And this was when I was newer at doing the phone ones. And so I said it and she said, oh, we take the ferry to Mackinac Island. And I was like, oh, yeah, it wants calm and medicine for the boat.
Aw.
And then one that really stuck out to me was I was in person and it had been a horse I'd read several times before at the horse show. And I come in and it's like, it's fine, it hurts. And the lady was like, it had to be more than just that. The horse looks at us, reaches around and grabs its flank and just holds it with its teeth and then looks at us and like pins its ears and goes and walks in the corner. I'm like, honey, it's the hindgut. Like, now you can't deny it because he participated in the conversation. And that was like, I like that stuff. That's why in-person stuff can be fun too.
That would be crazy to me.
Mm-hmm. I had another when I started. So I started out going to, I lived not far from the World Equestrian Center in Ohio. So I started out going there and like doing demos and stuff and giving a free question. And someone asked, does it hurt? So I asked it, do you hurt? And it like reaches around and touches its stifle, reaches around, touches its hock, and reaches around, touches its one front foot. And I was like, I don't even have to say it because it just did it. And yeah, so those are my favorite kind of things because it's undeniable.
Definitely.
I assume you get asked a lot about what's bothering him or what's his issue or.
Yeah, I guess I deal with a lot of behavioral stuff, physical stuff. I do working with the industry professionals because you can get like pretty like physiologically complex and people understand what to do with the information. But I'm always, the longer appointment, the better explanation you're going to get. I am super great at summarizing. I can get you there and sum it up to a couple of sentences, but you're not going to get as much out of it as if I actually gave you the full explanation. I will say that.
When you're talking to somebody's horse, we'll just say over the phone, what's your process? I mean, I've never done this. I'm always like very curious about it.
People always want to do video calls and I'm like, you don't want to do a video call. Like, I just get really quiet and I focus on them. And it's not up there in the ethers. You're not up there listening like that. You go down into your body. You get really, really deep in your body. And the layers they talk about in yoga, it really is like at that very bottom center layer is where the psychic space is. And so I just like ground into it and listen. Part of the reason they're so open with me is because I pass zero judgment. I have no judgment. You could tell me that your favorite animal is a purple dinosaur, even if you have no reason to ever know what a purple dinosaur is, and I don't care. So I think they feel really free to just say whatever they want to say because I don't expect an outcome from them. I just want to be a good listener.
Is there any common challenges that you have at all when you're communicating, or is it just like you said, you just ground yourself and let them free flow and communicate with you?
So I guess it's not from the animal's perspective. You can only get so much information across in so much amount of time. Like, you can feel people when they're absorbing and when it's like information overload. And so I think the body can only accept the information at a certain pace. So if a horse has 3 hours of stuff to say, Or I just road tripped with a client to pick a horse. And so we had like 8 hours together, and which was lovely. And she could get all of her information at once versus like trying to fit that 8 hours of information, do a 30-minute phone call. That to me is like where I'm still trying to work out like what's the best scenario for everybody involved, like how to structure my future of my business. Because it's a lot.
Do you feel like the horses are more than willing to give you all the information, or are some of them, you know, it's, you think about people and some people are very chatty and want to say all the things, and other people are short and closed off. So do you see that in the animals too?
Yeah, rescue dogs. So many rescue dogs. Mm. People want to know what happened to them. And a lot of them are like, no. It depends on how much the owner wants to push them. Sometimes you can push them and they'll go into it. But I try to advocate for the animal. If their parent has really done a great job and they've done a lot of healing and they don't want to go back, I'm not about to make them go back. I wouldn't want to go back either. But of course it's blah, blah, blah. Their whole whatever you want to say.
They're pretty chatty.
Yeah, they are.
I could see that. Awesome.
But horses are dealing with a different level of respect out of people than dogs are. Like, they are big, you have to respect them on a level. And dogs are sometimes don't get the best of us.
That's very true. What, in your opinion, is the potential benefits of understanding your animal's perspective or getting that communication from them?
The very basis, being able to enjoy them, like the joy that you have when you know you're connected to them. I guess my most successful cases, I like to watch the growth, like the personal growth between the animal and the people, or the individual's growth. And when I get to hear that they're doing so great, or like there was a goal that had been met, or something that had been won, or honestly, so many that are just feeling better, that are sounder, that are their the behavioral thing went away. That's my favorite part. You get the opportunity to listen to them, but then you have to take what they give you and figure out how to incorporate it into real life. And so I can give the information, but I have a lot of great people that know how to take the information and use it to make their horses feel better and other pets.
Can you share or maybe expand on that a little bit, exactly like what do you mean? I mean, not a specific example, but just so I'm trying to understand what you're saying here. Like if they tell you something like, I'm just going to throw this out, like my right foot hurts, my right front hoof hurts or something. That's what they tell you. And then so it's up to the people then to interpret it and how to fix it or figure out what's fixing it is like that kind of a thing, or what else? What do you mean?
I can help with the degree of pain, you know, because animals are a lot more sensitive than we are. I would say horses mostly because they are prey animals. So they have to be very hyper aware of themselves, because if a predator comes, they need to know how to, like, what their body is capable of so they can get the heck out of there. So they notice stuff in their bodies and feel pain on a higher level to deal with that. So I get a lot of superficial injuries that, like, you would never go to the doctor for. Like, if it was you and you bruised yourself, you would wait for it to heal. So as far as the foot goes, like, the owner that's going to take the time and pack it every day and help the bruising heal and go forward with more, I don't want to say, use the word holistic, but more just like natural ways to help them feel better and heal small dents and dings. Those are the ones that really sell, because then the horse is pain-free and the people are happy and the horse loves its job. It's just taking the time. Like, it's putting in the time to poultice the leg every day until the little bit of fluid goes away, and noticing when something's swollen. And the readings are a great way to get a map to get started.
Do the horses ever tell you if they like or don't like their job, or are they excited if they know they won something? Is that like a thing as well? Do they like care about our show aspirations?
Oh, they totally do.
Interesting.
They don't have real jobs anymore. They're not out pulling the carriages anymore. They like the social interaction. They like the activity I would say the vast majority of the horses I've ever bred, there's very rarely been one that does not want to participate with its owner. And if it doesn't, it's always due to pain issues. I always assume that, like, the ones that don't want to do their job, those people generally are not calling me. I would say race horses either love it or hate it. That's the one, like, actively racing thoroughbreds. They either love it or they hate it. That's its own beast, that industry, with those guys. But the show horses, a lot of show horses would rather live at home with their parents and get to know their parents more personally than to live with the trainers. They love their trainers, but it's like
being at boarding school.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. Because as much as training is important, the relationship is equally, if not more, important.
There's I don't know if this is a good question or not. In the range of emotions, do horses, we'll just use horses, so I'm not talking about all animals, but do they experience all of them? Like happy, sad, jealousy, sarcasm, you know, like what are there specific ones that they use?
That totally makes sense. So it's a little different. They experience like the bottom on the bottom on the top of the top, but they are better at observing their emotions instead of like embodying their emotions. So your horse can be outwardly expressing the bottom emotions, but it's not as much like, you know how like when we feel emotional pain, it like hurts everywhere. I don't know. They like have them. I don't know. Like their soul does not participate. It just like, it's like, oh, this is happening to me. It's very.
You know, what's like interesting to me about the studies that have been done on mental health in humans is that like depression, anxiety is way more prevalent in a developed society than it is like in a third world country. Mm-hmm. And that seems counterintuitive to us because you're like, if you're literally worried about getting food or where you're going to sleep at night, that would be pretty stressful. You'd think you would have a miserable life. And those types of people tend to suffer from depression and anxiety. All of us, you know, a house and food at every quarter. And so we are like almost, we have too much time and too many resources. So we're left to develop these bad tendencies in our brains mm-hmm. that then, you know, are not productive for us. So I almost wonder with like the animals, they're more in that primal state still where they can't overthink about their own thoughts a little bit and get in. That's not really the right word to say, because I know you said they're more intuitive about their thought processes, but I wonder if there's any kind of.
That's a great way to think about it. And it's so with horses, it's all management. I guess how I used it in my training program was like having their needs met. And, you know, in the really good show barns and like when they're stuck inside all the time, like I was training out of a place where they were just stuck inside all the time. It was the only option. But because I could meet their needs, their basic needs, mm-hmm. They were happy and they were fine. And that's the same with a lot of the really good show barns. If you see really high quality management, they don't care what they're doing. they're just happy.
Yeah, it goes back to that whole hierarchy of needs
yeah.
pyramid, if you guys have ever seen that.
Yeah.
But fascinating to me.
On that note, I know in the beginning and before we started recording, we were having a conversation. Like Jenna and I have never done this before, and we were wanting to learn more. Is there any common misconceptions people have about the animal communication or just this type of industry in general that you would want to touch on?
I think the biggest thing I would attest to is, right, I guess it's a little bit different of an answer, is the back to the pain thing. It's like not everything your animal complains about is vet worthy, but it also doesn't mean that if you see something that looks like it needs it, that you shouldn't get the vet. There is a lot of good information, but it's judgment call on your part with like how to use it. I think I was trying to think of I've only ever had 3 complaints in my whole record of doing this. And it's always been like a misjudgment on how to treat a pain problem. And so I try to be very specific now. Like, if this changes, then look for it. Like, what does it look like? And then we talked through it a little bit. I guess there aren't really misconceptions. It's more, do people think they're going to get valuable information out of it? And if I could advocate anything about it, is that, you know, it is useful, whether their favorite color is blue or their feet need packed once a week, or when they travel, they hate their hay bag on the right. It all contributes to them having happier lives.
For the people that are skeptical, I'm a very like pragmatic, logical person, and I'm very open-minded. So I have a level of intrigue about all of this and want to learn more and open-minded to it. But because I'm very more like analytical about things, you know, it's hard for me to not be completely, not, I wouldn't say completely skeptical about it, but is it just a product of, for you, of just, you know, like telling somebody to try it and your results speak for itself generally, or how do you handle the skeptics in the world?
Yeah, usually once people try, because all I do is listen and tell you what they say. So there's always something that resonates with the person. So there is like a physiological difference in the brain when you are mediuming. I was learning more about it. And it's like, if you were to scan my brain while I was doing it, my brain is like very still. And that's like how the information comes through. And so, like, I am not a part of it at all. I just literally just open up and it comes through.
Horses have, and this goes to my motion question, I guess, but do they have a sense of humor, some of them?
Totally.
They're just goofballs out there legitimately.
Yeah, they do have very unique personalities. Cast dogs, rabbits, like, they all have very different and interesting personalities.
Did you learn from somebody? You said your grandma, but so when you were like really starting to hone in on this as maybe doing it as a professional, did you just all of a sudden decide, I don't want to say all of a sudden you decided you're confident enough, but you developed enough confidence to be like, okay, I'm going to do this for other people and take money for it? Or did you work with somebody, or kind of how did you get to this place now?
No, I just knew. I knew so deep down in my soul a lot, because I trained a gajillion horses with the graphs and the other, and I got to watch it. Then I think at the time I was with someone who really didn't believe in it at all. So it was very conflicting. I'm living with a person who doesn't believe with it, but I've seen it. I have 30,000 hours of watching it work. So I just, that's where I got my confidence, is those horses were young and they were giants and they accepted me as one of them because I communicated with them on a regular basis. Like, it was always, how are you feeling? What do you want? What do you need? How do you feel? What do you want? Was this okay today? What are we doing? What do you want to do today? I would plan their training programs around what they wanted to do. And if I hadn't had all those zillion hours at it, then I probably would not be as confident. And I always say the horses taught me. Like, if you really want to know how I developed my skill, the horses taught me. A lot of the energy, this is a totally different topic, but all the energy healing work I do, like, I'm certified Reiki master, but all of the energy healing the horses taught me.
I'm like I said, I'm like the most logical, pragmatic, analytical person ever, but I am a firm believer in energies, like energy levels and like vibrational levels. So not get like completely off the subject here. And so a lot of me, like, especially when you're talking about a hierarchy of needs and safety and like that type of stuff, I'm like, a lot of that is what level of energy you can vibrate at. Does that have anything to do with like being a medium, you think?
Well, the channel dancer is yes.
I'm not saying like, am I a medium? But I mean, like, it, you have some, I guess you consider energies in your work is the better question.
I work hard to stay in the bliss space. I think that is part. But there's a similarity between bliss and stillness. And I'm a very still person. And in our society, you might call me lazy, but in order to receive that level of information, I have to be so quiet because those messages, they vibrate at such a high level that you have to be in that bliss space with them.
I love that stuff. I know it sounds so weird for me because I'm not like one of these, I don't even know what, abstract-y kind of people, but the whole energy spectrum is really fascinating.
It's the big part of wellness. I mean, that's what I like about doing the people side is like, it really benefits from a wellness perspective. I mean, it benefits the animals in a wellness perspective, but doing both sides is fun.
So I know we mentioned the ethical part of this a little bit in the beginning, but what are you mindful of when you're communicating with the horses? Or do some throw up straight boundaries? Like if you're having a reading with a customer or a client, how does that play out? Are they usually open, or do you have some that have the boundaries up, or how does that work?
Generally, so someone knows what the person can handle. So if they're like, they know we have 30 minutes, or they know we have an hour, they know that we can cover X, Y, and Z, and the person can understand it, and the horse can feel at peace about the animal, whatever, can feel at peace about it. And so they kind of manage that end of it. I've been told that it is ethical for a trainer to ask about a client horse, because the information that a client horse will share with the trainer is different than the information then the horse does share with the client, because it's going to give the trainer straight facts, like, my hip hurts, I need a chiropractor, get my teeth done more often, you know? Whereas with the client, they have more of an emotional relationship. So they're going to talk about deeper, more personal stuff. The biggest thing that I have dealt with is I am not allowed to share what happens very rarely. Then I just usually just don't share what happens in a session, like on social media or anything. I don't share. That is their therapy time with me. And, you know, they do a lot of emotional release work with me. So I just, it's always been black and white from day one. That's nobody's business what those animals share, like other than the person I'm in it with. It's nobody's business to know what those horses are feeling.
Have you ever had a reading where the horse told you they don't like their owner? Or there's a bad situation there from the horse? I'm like, that would be an awkward spot for you, I would think, if that ever happens.
No, you know how many people think that their horses don't like them? It's so many, and it's so not true. They have their reasons for their feelings, but it's very objective. It's my hip hurts, my rib hurts. It's not, I don't like you. It's there are these things that need addressed, and if you address them, we can go back to being happy together. I would say the most emotionally distant horses I've had are ones where they're with the trainer and you see it never. I think the ones that I'm thinking of, the person would go see it once a year. Like, how is it supposed to have a relationship with the person if it never gets to be with the person?
Yeah, I wondered about that too. Or people that buy a horse that, you know, goes immediately to the training barn and they show up at a show and ride it from time to time, but don't really have a true relationship with the horse. But those also probably aren't the people that are calling you to.
Yeah, but even those ones, it's like, if you want to know similarities, everybody is so different. I mean, out of the bajillion readings I've done, nobody is the same. Nobody's relationship is the same. Nobody's dynamic is the same. Some are like, oh, I know exactly who my mom is, and they come to the show and I'm so happy. And then like, it loves its trainer and it goes there and it sleeps and it learns and stays in shape. And then, but then you have the couple that are like, who, what? Mom, what? Those aren't the people that are usually coming to me.
Do you get told from show horses, are most of them comfortable living in their stalls?
It goes back.
Yeah, I've had it both ways. Some that I try to get mine all turned out regardless, but some of them I'm like, there's no way they would stay outside. Even when they're turned out, they're back in, you know, in like 3 hours because they don't like the bugs and the heat or something. And they're miserable till you bring them back in after a couple hours. But I always wonder that. I'm like, what do the horses really think? Are we just projecting on them?
Again, it's a unique individual situation. Some of them have to be, if they were born inside and like weanling yearling stuffed inside a lot, you have to teach them how to be outside. So they'll be like, oh, they need a bush and they need to sit in the pasture with me until I learn that my pasture is a safe space. It also depends on what part of the country you're in, if it feels more natural to be outside or not. Oh, there's so many things. Some are just happy in the stall. Some love their turnout schedule, like literally on a daily basis. Like today I want to go out for 8 hours. Today I want to go out for no hours. Today I want to go out for 2 hours. Like that's the part that I enjoy. Like I enjoy. I only have my two personal horses now, and I self-cared them for like the last 4 years. This is my first time back in full care, and I loved it because if they wanted to go out for 2 hours, I put them out for 2 hours. If they wanted to go out for 2 days, I'd leave them out for 2 days. It was totally based on what they want to do, and that was super rewarding for me.
I may have an off the wall question.
Yeah,
there's the old, I won't even call it an old wives' tale, but people always say, don't change the horse's name after somebody's named them when it was a weanling or born or whenever. What is a take from a horse that had its name switched after? Do you know?
They do not care at all.
Good.
Their spirits don't really identify with the name. They identify with the vibration. I guess if it's a name that rolls out of your mouth in a happy way, that's a good name for it. If it's something that reminds you of something that agitates you, probably not a good name for it. It was really interesting when my stud picked me. His name is Marvin, and I had a dog for a long time whose name was Marvin, and he's the goofiest, happiest. Like, you could not say the name Marvin and be any happier because of the way that dog left his mark. When I got the stud, he was just so happy with the way that I said his name. It made him just melt into me right away. He's like, so just say my name again. So I just went, think of the emotion when you're picking names. If you're picking something that makes you happy or not, or it does reflect on them.
Interesting. So I guess we've almost had you for an hour. What advice or tips would you give to us horse owners who want to better understand their horses?
Oh, the thing that keeps coming to me is just listen. Listening happens inside of the space when we're no longer in a rush. So it all depends on how your day is going. If you're not in a rush, the answer was kind of come to you, you know, in your body, like, oh, it's crappy out, let's all go home. Or like, oh, I just want to lunge today. If you're relaxed, then the answers are authentic. It's only when we're like exasperated or, you know, some of the lower feeling emotions that we start projecting our stuff on them. Do a lot of things to relax and then just listen and hold space for the outcome. Like, if you want to win a world championship, like that is great. But don't hold on to how you get there. If there's a 2 month layup, trust your 2 month layup. The horse knows, the universe knows, the animals are more connected to the source than people are because we have all the extra thought. So they know the shortest path from point A to point B. Relax and enjoy the ride, as they always say.
Co-host Jenna, did you have any other questions?
Well, like I said, most of our podcasts, my brain is going in 18 directions right now with all of the thoughts and like excitement I have on questions. But Jenna, if somebody was interested in doing a reading with you, what's your process like to get them set up? How do you book things with you? Kind of what's that like?
I'm going to totally throw away my website and start a new website this year. So obviously the best way is just text me. I've spent most of my life in the barn. I am not the techiest person right now.
Amen to that. I relate. I'm getting ready to just throw away one and start over too. So
yeah,
here we go.
Yeah. So my phone number is a lot of places. My Facebook is the easiest way to find all of my information. My business name is The Equimist. And I just like setting things up personally because then I get to read the situation a little bit and it's like, something interesting that has to do with scheduling. is if your horse is going through something, but it's going to be better in 2 days, they literally won't let me read them until like 5 days away. So like everything is...
And they know this, though? Oh, yeah.
And it's very meticulously timed. So if something like, I mean, I've had people, because I am very, like you said, I'm very ethical. So stuff like if I have to reschedule or something, it drives me bananas. And sometimes it will happen, and it always happens for a reason. And so I have to like let my ego go and be like, okay, I'll reschedule them. Like there's always a reason. I save space for emergency readings, because if you need to know now, you need to know now. Or if you need to wait, you need to wait. So texting me is my best avenue of communication.
Would you ever be open to doing a session with us on the podcast?
As long as we get the animal's consent, I would. It's always up to them.
Yeah.
Do they want to share their story or don't they?
Right. Totally get that. I understand. That could be fun.
Yeah. I mean, something we, like I said, there are so many different ways that we can talk about this, because there's so many different little avenues. But I do a lot of energy healing and release work. And I think that's why our sessions end up being so personal. It would be fun to do it on the air.
We may have to do that then in the future.
And like any question, it would be fun to... I don't know if you want to ask a show horse something. I've worked with a lot of very cool horses in the quarter horse business that have some cool stories that I didn't even think about sharing with you guys today. Whatever you guys think the listeners would want to hear, I would be happy to deliver.
But we definitely appreciate you coming on a Sunday and giving us an hour of your time. I definitely will be reaching out just to do a reading for myself. So it was super interesting and intriguing. And my brain feels like it's all squishy with things that I wish I could just know myself, but really appreciate your time today.
You're welcome. I just really appreciate your guys' time and helping spread the word that this is something that is out there. Oh, can I give one more tip?
That was actually going to be my last question, is if you had anything you wanted to say or tips that we haven't touched on today before you go.
So another term for people to do what I do is a reader. And that's like my casual term for it, a reader. When you are picking your reader, pick the person that you're the most drawn to. I think that is super important in my business, is I never say come to me. If you look through a list and you're like, it has to be that one, then it does. It has to be that one, because they will read whatever is most important in the way that it needs to be read.
Interesting.
Yeah. But that I always tell people that I'm right here in front of you, but if there's somebody else that you're more drawn to, then go to that person.
I've followed that kind of premise a lot for making decisions on things, is like, go with your initial gut feeling. Like, we almost get in our way of overthinking things and be like, well, what about this? And what about that? And I'm like, well, that's our human brains. But if you just, whatever your initial reaction is on something, that's how I bought horses. I'm like, if I pull something up in the first three lope strides that I see, I'm like, I freaking love this thing. Then I'm just like, all right, you know, that works for me. Whereas if you watch something and you're like, hey, it looks good here, I like it there, could I do this? You know, then I'm like, nope, not right. So same thing, I guess, with trying to find a good medium.
Yeah, and we all have our specialties. I have had all those years of being a professional. I do really great with the trainers and the vets and the farriers and elected my niche of amateurs. And I do really great with the first people who have never done it before. That's a big part of my gift. Me and beginners are just like, I'm just really kind at it. And so, yeah, that's why there's the person that's meant for you. They're gifted right down your alley.
Awesome. Well, thank you for your time. Lots of things to think about and digest. And we'll see what our listener reactions are on this. And maybe we can get you on to do like a reading or something with us. That would be cool.
Yeah, that sounds good. I had a great time.
Thank you very much.
Alrighty.
Thank you, guys.
Have a great rest of the Sunday.
Thank you.
You too.
All right, that'll be your class. Bring them in and line them up.